It's funny what you learn about yourself when you're traveling. You learn really quickly if you enjoy the romance of getting lost in the back streets of a new city, or if it makes you really anxious. If you like the idea of hours spent looking at old oil portraits, or if you like the idea better than the actual practice. If you really want to try the exotic cuisine you plan to try, or if in the end you just really would like a slice of pepperoni pizza. And specifically in my case, whether you're really over that old elevator phobia you had as a child. This month, I had the awesome opportunity to travel in Transylvania, a region in northern Romania, to meet Unitarians who have been Unitarians longer than the United States has been a country. The region is geographically isolated between two mountain ranges and was for 5 decades veiled by communism. So life in Transylvania is a lot different than life in Western Europe. As our van trundled over old gravel roads to the village, we stopped here and there to look at the great sites of Romania, beautiful old wooden churches from the 1000s, hand-painted with folk motifs of doves and hearts. Romanian Orthodox cathedrals, these huge stone behemoths, they're gray and stately on the outside, and inside are a riot of primary color. Every inch of every surface is painted with a biblical scene or a saint's face. Art museums holding oil portraits, which I actually did really like because the Eastern European style is so different than anything I had seen. And we visited tiny cafes serving 1,000 different variations of goulash, which was delicious and made me want pizza. It's only so much goulash a person can eat. Transylvania is peppered with a few old communist buildings, these practical and ugly concrete monsters that hulk menacingly over the narrow gardens and clotheslines surrounding them. And it was in one of those old monsters that I got to test my childhood fear of elevators when we got stuck somewhere around the 18th floor. Fortunately, only for about 20 minutes. And fortunately, I didn't have a panic attack. But it didn't help with the only other person stuck in there said, "Have you eaten? Because we might be in here all night." No! I laughed, but she wasn't kidding. Transylvanians are different. They're very practical. Traveling in another culture calls into question what is normal. The first day in Romania, we had potato bread and cold lunch meat and spicy Dijon mustard for breakfast alongside sliced tomatoes and fresh cucumbers. And it was quirky and it was interesting to eat that for breakfast. But when I realized that's what Romanians eat for breakfast every single day, I had to think about what is normal breakfast food. Not cereal, not oatmeal, not here. Breakfast was meat with vegetables and bread, but not in a sandwich. Romanians don't eat sandwiches. When I piled my food up, they'd say, "Why are you piling your food up? We have knives and forks." Like, what, some sort of an animal eating her food in a big pile with her hands, you know? Some kind of a monster. These elements are meant to be eaten separately with silverware, with strong black tea or instant coffee, that awful powdered coffee. We drank a lot of coffee. Our Transylvanian hosts don't drink water, plain water. They served us coffee or palinka, which is the strong fruit brandy they make at home. And palinka, you're allowed to drink that any time of day. People have palinka for breakfast, but if you have to go to work, then you drink coffee. Juice is for children. Water is for animals. Asking for plain water made our hosts crack up. They didn't think it was funny when we talked about eating lettuce. They thought, lettuce, that's crazy. Lettuce is for animals. Lettuce is what we feed rabbits. You feed the rabbits the lettuce, and then you eat the rabbits. Why are you cutting out the middleman? I'm not sure why you would just eat the lettuce. Lettuce is filler food. It's just for the animals that live out back. Giving a Transylvanian a big salad for dinner would be a huge insult. It would be like saying, "You have the brain of a chicken. Have some lettuce." So this water and salad thing, this really challenged me on what was normal, because I have salad every day here for lunch, and I drink so much water, my friends in school called me the camel. And sure, for a few days, it was novel to drink coffee and eat meat and meat and more meat, but after a week, I was ready for Seattle normal again. The first thing I did after landing was stop for kale juice. It's embarrassing, but it's true. But I can't imagine sharing kale juice with my Transylvanian friends. They would think that was absolutely insane. Why would you eat the stuff for animals? It's an honor and a pleasure to share a sermon with you every week, and it builds between us a special relationship because I stand here and I share honestly from my soul, both things that I'm proud of and things that I'm not proud of, which in most professions you're not encouraged to talk a lot about what you aren't proud of, but ministry is special. And so with that honesty in mind, I want to share with you that traveling in Transylvania changed some biases that were so deep and so implicit, I didn't even realize that they were there. So a big one was American exceptionalism. Now, I like living in the United States. I appreciate that I got a great public school education. I appreciate that I can get great medical care down the street from my house, that roads are paved, which is a really nice thing after you've been in Transylvania on rock roads for a few weeks. I appreciate having freedom of religion and of speech. I wouldn't say I'm a big patriot, but I do think we do a lot well in this country. Not everything. We have things to fix. But, you know, I'm not a big patriot. I don't have American flag jewelry. I don't have a flag outside my apartment. I don't sing God Bless the USA because I don't think God has a favorite country. But somewhere deep inside, I thought all those nice folks I met in Transylvania, the subsistence farmers and the factory workers, the ministers and the school teachers and the secretaries, I was sure that they really wished they lived here. Again, this isn't an idea I knew I had until it was disproved. It's not something I'm proud of. I had this implicit bias, despite being more likely to attend a political protest than a 4th of July parade, that the United States was the best, and that everyone really wanted to live here. If they had a choice, they would live here, especially folks living in Eastern Europe who were under communism for 50 years. But it turns out, they're really worried about gun violence in the United States. They were really curious about whether the people in our group sent our children to school because they were so worried about school shootings. I met a teacher who said she wouldn't teach if she lived in the United States or send her children to school because she was so sure that that was dangerous. My internal biases were rattled. My sense of who I am and who we all are as Americans was shaken because it turns out the desire to live here isn't universal. Transylvanians like living close to the land. They like raising animals. They're so proud that they live in a place where their ancestors have lived for 2,000 years, often in the very house that their ancestors lived in. They pass houses down. They're proud to be Transylvania. They're proud of their resilience under communism. And they're in love with the Carpathian Mountains, which surround the village. So, if oatmeal for breakfast isn't normal, and salad for lunch isn't universal, if longing to be an American isn't universal, then what is? This month our theme is home. And in Transylvania, I started to think, maybe home is where everything is normal to you. Because where life is familiar and predictable, where you can have plain water and lettuce for lunch, and lunch meat is for lunchtime. Is home a place where everyone shares your idea about what is normal and usual? What is home, and where is home? I loved Transylvania. I would go back again with no reservations. It was an incredibly beautiful place to be with kind and generous people. but it's nice to be back in the Northwest. It's easier. Anyone who's been a part of a cultural exchange can tell you it's fascinating but exhausting to live outside your boundaries of what is comfortable. We fell into bed every night completely wiped out from constantly adjusting to what was normal, to the constant recalibration of being abroad. But does normal make a place home? The problem is, if home is a place of predictability, if home is where there are no unpleasant surprises, is that a real place? Because even into the most predictable life, surprises fall. Bodies fail. Relationships are tested. The earth shifts. The climate changes. The job you expected to have until retirement disappears. The work that you spent years training to do is now done by a computer. The uncertainty of travel reminded me that nothing is really certain, even in my own nation, even in my own apartment. Life is impermanence. Remember that old Buddhist word? We talked about this in the spring. Impermanence. Everything is impermanent, so home has to be on your inside. And we better be ready for it to shift and change. Our Buddhist spiritual cousins tell us that the only certain thing is uncertainty. That life is better when we accept that everything is impermanent, that everything can and will change. Expecting relationships or work or health to remain the same is our nature. It's what we do, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's human nature. We like life to be predictable, but it makes us suffer that we hold on to that, that we don't want things to change. It makes us suffer that we expect life to be normal and that every shift causes such consternation. In traveling and in attachments, I'm trying to look at change like an unexpected present that is lovingly given, but huge. A huge white elephant sculpture given to me that is interesting, but I don't have space for. Well, isn't that interesting? Look how unusual its trunk is. Look how its gaze seems to follow me. But really, it's a huge white elephant sculpture, and what on earth am I going to do with it? I did not order a white elephant sculpture. I'm not sure how this gift will fit in my life or in my home, but I have to learn to make space for it. Our last day in the village in Transylvania, our host prepared us a huge breakfast, more food than we could have eaten in a week. Sausages and deli meat and this wonderful paprika spread that was spicy, and then another paprika spread that looked exactly the same but was sweet. And lard. Lard is really big in Transylvania. Lard is a special treat. It's pig lard, pig fat, and they store it in a jar, or they press it with a little bit of pig meat into sausages, and it looks like lard. I mean, it looks like what it is. It's not disguised at all. And it's a special occasion food. It's like what you have on Christmas morning. So it was a big deal. We couldn't not eat the lard because, like, it was a really fine gift. It's like giving your guests like caviar, you know, lard. So we had to try it. So I thought, well, okay, it's a gift. It's unexpected. It's lovingly given. It's the elephant. Just eat the lard. And I wasn't a fan. It was like bacon-flavored jelly. Like it had that gummy texture to it. But we also had onion tea, which sounds terrible, but it's fantastic stuff. This is a Transylvanian thing. A woman in our group had this terrible chest cough, this really wet cough she couldn't get rid of, and she was just coughing. And our host made her onion tea, which is just slicing up white onion or yellow onion and boiling it for 5-10 minutes, and then you pour the liquid into a teacup and you serve it with a slice of lemon and some honey, and it fixes everything wrong with your body. It's amazing. It's the most amazing stuff. Transylvanians didn't really have health care under communism. There was so they have a lot of folk remedies for things, and a lot of them are really fantastic. And this is one of them. Anything that's wrong with you, this onion tea will, everything was fixed. My stomach was settled, my sinuses were clear. Onion tea. It's a superfood, I guess. So onion tea I'll make again. This was a gift that I can use, the elephant that I wanted. So I learned about making peace with impermanence, letting it be a part of my home, the home that I carry with me, inside of me. I had to accept that things like pig lard are going to come my way and just take them as an unexpected gift and realize that they were lovingly given. Next Sunday morning, we're going to touch on impermanence again as we celebrate Dies de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. This is a popular and well-loved all-ages service in our congregation, and we're going to celebrate the lives of people and pets who have passed away, remembering everything that they taught us, celebrating what they taught us, and knowing that their spirit is as close as our memory. If you feel so moved, bring a memento of a person or a pet that you've loved, a dog collar or a locket or a photo. And please encourage any kiddos in your life to bring something as well. We love it when the kids participate. And we're going to create an altar of memories right here. In the meantime, let's think about what home means in a world that is globalized, but radically different from region to region. And let's think about impermanence and the impermanence of our lives and of those that we love.